It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. We explore how you use astrology and where you draw the line. 1 in 20 Americans check their horoscope often. Women identify more strongly than men with their astrological sign. That's Ipsos there polling a few years back. Call in about your questions about astrology, tarot cards, horoscopes, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Astrologer Nadine Jain's book is called Magic Days, Your Journey Through the Astrology, Numerology, and Tarot of Every Day of the Year. Nadine, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Well, let's start with that one word, magic. What does it mean to you?
I think for me, I mean, especially in the process of writing the book, I wanted to kind of get a zoomed out picture of what the spiritual practices have to say about each of our lives. And so I think the magic component speaks to the sort of intangible nature of the spirit world and the ways in which we have to notice and observe what's happening on a spiritual level, because it's so easy to get lost in our daily lives. And so, yeah, to me, magic is sort of the indefinable part of being a human, which is also, I think, in part being a spiritual person.
I wonder, how did the child Nadine view magic differently than the adult Nadine?
Well, I was raised by two chemistry professors, and they are scientists. And I was really raised as I grew older to put facts and to put tangible evidence at the forefront of everything, of how I saw the world. And so childlike Nadine, I think, noticed magic and didn't have to overthink it and was an observer of the inexplicable, amazing things that happen in our lives. And then as I grew older, I think it's really easy for all of us to become more skeptical, to kind of feel like you need to explain why you believe in things. And then writing this book actually in some ways allowed me to return to my original state as a kid and be more open-minded to how these spiritual practices fit together. So yes, it's been a journey, to say the least.
Did you ever feel some embarrassment about pursuing astrology with your loved ones who are chemists? I mean, was that difficult to see eye to eye?
That's a great question. Yes and no. I mean, one joke in our family is that they wished I would have been an astronomer rather than an astrologer, but it's good natured. And I will say we've actually discovered that our jobs have more commonalities actually than they do differences, because science is a wonderful, beautiful method of understanding how the world works. And actually, astrology is the same thing. One of them requires a little bit more faith than the other. But I think we're both in the business of asking really big questions that we don't necessarily have perfect answers to. And my parents, more than anyone, understand that there are so many facets of how the world works that even science has yet to understand. So long-winded way of saying, yes, on paper, it was kind of incredibly excruciatingly nerve-wracking to go into such a different field. But then it ended up coming full circle and has been a great conversation starter between me and my parents.
Well, let's look at those contrasts between astrology and astronomy. I mean, centuries ago, very long time ago, astronomy and astrology, they were done side by side. We've heard the stories. Galileo practiced astrology. So, you know, how is astrology different from astronomy?
So they're just like you were describing, the earliest astronomers were astrologers and vice versa. They were kind of synonymous way back in the day. And you know, astrology actually began in the Babylonian era in Mesopotamia. So, you know, somewhere between 2000 BC and 700 BC. So a really, really long time ago. And so the ways in which the practices overlap is that they're both a study of the sky. And, you know, the piece of astrology that absolutely is astronomy is the placements of the planets and the sort of geometry of where everything is in the sky. But the piece that differentiates them pretty drastically is that there's a human interpretation, which thus makes it a spiritual practice, of what does it mean that, you know, Pluto was in Scorpio, or what does it mean that the sun is in Aquarius, or et cetera, et cetera. And so the place in which they really begin to diverge is the analysis, putting meaning behind these planets, and as well as just a general belief system. But there's a huge amount of overlap, and I'm glad that you brought that up, because I think since astrology is so commonly referred to as a pseudoscience, it is nice to mention the ways in which there is some actual science behind the whole thing.
Talking about astrology with astrologer Nadine Jane, and the new book is called Magic Days, Your Journey Through the Astrology, Numerology, and Tarot of Every Day of the Year. You can join in at 800-642-1234, which leads me to wonder, to embrace astrology, do you have to reject science? Is there an absolute here, or is this more about embracing the unexplicable?
That's a great question again. I absolutely don't think that they're mutually exclusive. I am a huge believer in science. I was literally raised by scientists. I think that they can coexist simultaneously. And I really feel like for anyone who's a skeptic, or who maybe it feels embarrassed about their belief in astrology, I think that it's just more information. It's very insightful. There's not a ton of negative to be gained from engaging with the practice of astrology. It's not a religion. It doesn't require anything of you. It's really just a practice of self-exploration, and it's curious. And then another thing I would like to mention around this topic is, you know, the moon, for example, it affects the tides, it affects the crops. And so there's this concept in astrology of synchronicity. So this idea of perhaps the moon is affecting us down here as well, not just the tides and the crops. And so, yeah, I just feel like all of these concepts can fit together. And I always like to say, take what you like and leave the rest. If there are pieces of astrology that really don't sit well with you, that's great. And it absolutely does not discount science. And science, I don't think, has to discount astrology.
Take us into birth charts. What does a birth chart say about a person? And if someone's interested in it, what should you do?
So birth charts, really, I wish everyone could know about, because I think astrology gets a bad reputation due to the fact that most of us only know our sun sign, meaning the day that you were born. If you look up your horoscope at the back of the magazine or something, but the birth chart is the map of where the planets were at the exact moment that you were born. So what was Mercury doing? What was Jupiter doing? What was Venus doing, et cetera, et cetera. And what the birth chart tells a story of is the planetary energies that were occurring right at the moment that you were born, and thus potentially how they've influenced the personality archetype that you have, as well as, if you believe in this, potentially a life path for you to take, potential opportunities. And so it can tell strengths, weaknesses, interest, disinterest, you know, places of tension within your life. And so just speaking for myself, I think the birth chart was the most illuminating spiritual practice I'd ever encountered, because it felt like I was just being mirrored back to myself. Nothing that I've ever learned about my birth chart has surprised me, but instead it feels like this deep sense of resonance. And it's a beautiful experience to feel like the planets are talking back at you and that you're in conversation with them. So yeah, the birth chart is just this very vivid story of what the planets were doing when you were born.
As I hear you say this, it makes me think about wondering whether astrology is more like a tool for knowing yourself, maybe on a deeper level, or maybe being just more introspective about yourself. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of what I feel of what are the negative consequences of engaging with astrology. In my opinion, not many. I think the only place in which it can get into tricky territory is when you don't use as a tool for introspection, but instead as a tool to tell you who you are without discovering who you are. But I think on its best day, I think it gives us so much information about what we can explore within ourselves. Especially, I think my favorite part about doing chart readings for clients, so, you know, getting a professional reading done, is I really love to mirror back to a client that the dream that they've always had shows up in the birth chart, because So often in society, we're kind of told that dream is silly, or it's unreasonable, or it will never happen. And the birth chart can often be this sort of encouraging parental figure, so to speak, just telling you, hey, I think that's a really good idea. And I think you could be really talented at that. And maybe the dream won't look exactly how you envisioned it, but I think you're onto something good. So yeah, I just think it's a tool for self-awareness, and then also potentially self-empowerment of realizing what your highest potential is, and to affirm maybe some of the stories that you know are deep within you, but you've been too embarrassed or too shy or too fearful to pursue.
Nadine Jain's book is called Magic Days, using astrology, tarot cards, numerology to illuminate. Call in with your thoughts and questions about reading horoscopes or your experience at a tarot card reading, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It's The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. As we dive into astrology in a guidebook to determine the energy of the day and the personality essence of someone born on that day, bring your questions and experiences with astrology, how you view your zodiac sign, whether you check your horoscope or not. 800-642-1234. Astrologer Nadine Jain's book is called Magic Days, and she stays with us. Let's bring in Christian in Milwaukee with a question. Hi, Christian.
Hey, how's it going?
Good.
So I was curious because I know a lot of people that are into astrology. They take it very seriously. And I've always asked them, how is it that identical twins born on the same day at the same time can be very different, like personality-wise, and live different, very different lives?
Christian, thank you for that question. Nadine, how about identical twins and as it relates to astrology?
That is such a good question. And one that I actually don't get very often, and I wish I got more. But so exactly right that the charts are going to be identical. And so their rising sign will be the same, the sun, the moon, all of those qualities. And I think what makes them so different is how they were nurtured. So I think it becomes a question of nature versus nurture. And so this concept of you can have all the same ingredients, but they bake differently. And so who did that person come into contact with? Were they closer with mom? Were they closer with dad? Or were they closer with this other caretaker? What friends did they make in school? There are other charts that end up impacting the original birth chart, different life experiences. And so even just being one of two, for example, changes the course. They can't have identical lives and how they play out. And so, yeah, I think about this question a lot. And so I think the general personality archetype similar, but the way that it's going to manifest is going to be quite different.
Christian, thank you for the call. So in your book, Nadine, you list every day of the year and you use astrology to define the energy of that particular day. How do you go about writing a horoscope?
That's a great question. Sorry. I feel like I'm saying that over and over again. These are just fantastic questions. So the way you go about writing a horoscope, let's say for the month, because I think that's the most common type of horoscope, is you would just look at what the planets are doing and their movements. So you're essentially tracking cycles, and you're noticing, okay, the sun is going to be, let's say, taking this month, we're ending Sagittarius season. Maybe Venus is in Capricorn right now. And so what I do is I tie together all of these different planetary stories into a cohesive story and then figure out how those planetary movements are impacting each sign. And so you're kind of giving everyone a slightly individual story of how the planetary movements are going to play out into their lives. And every astrologer is different with how they approach horoscopes, but I'm not a huge believer in determinism. And thus, I don't like to write things, you know, in the kind of cliche way, which is this month you'll make a bunch of money, or, you know, this month you're going to break up with your partner, but instead to talk about themes, feelings, energies, those I think are more appropriate to be predicting rather than actual events. And so, yeah, that's generally what goes into a horoscope.
And that's interesting you say that, because I imagine you would have to be so careful how you choose your words in that write-up. And I would imagine, too, that because it is a brief write-up, that the, you know, your word choice has to be, you know, you must deliberate over that.
Absolutely. And it's something that I think about a lot. And I think, luckily, I think a lot of astrologers think about this, is the ethics of what it means to predict the future. And what do you have the right to say? And this even goes even beyond horoscopes, but doing readings with clients is absolutely something I have to think about, around boundaries and what is and is not my place to be discussing with them. And even what are the limitations of astrology? Because I think that astrology has no limits, but I think humans have major limits to what they can be predicting, myself included. And so, long story short is, I don't like to put ideas or words in people's heads that I don't have the power to know. And so keeping it not vague, but keeping it open and expansive enough for people to insert their own experiences into a horoscope, I think is very vital. And then also, I think, really important from an ethics perspective.
Nadine Jane with us, an astrologer. New book is called Magic Days. Let's take another call now. Michael James in Elgin, Illinois. Hi, Michael James.
Hi there. Good morning.
Good morning. Go ahead.
Well, my experience with astrology has changed my entire life. I began in graduate school when I was majoring in clinical psychology, and became ultimately a clinical astral psychologist. The thing that I first clued me into the validity of astrology was I was doing a computerized research project for my degree, which was required. And we took people that in those days, the computers were done on cards that were sorted by the computer by the answer to the questionnaire. Nothing like today when you have pocket computers and you have
technology has changed a lot. Yes. Michael James, I want to get to the heart of your question. What would you like to ask?
I'd like to ask how many people stop to think about the fact that astrology governs their entire life in advance. You can see from the life story of a baby what child will face, what obstacles and what challenges and what opportunities are all there. And people don't think about that astrology as a map for their life, but it really is. And if you get into it, you can see how valid that thesis is.
So Nadine, you know, we hear Michael James here being very committed to astrology. What would you say to him?
I mean, I just think I couldn't agree more. And I think a lot about how astrology is the map to the soul. And I think the place in which I like to bring in some, not self-will, but kind of how we react to life into the scheme of the equation, is just this idea of we have all this potential and we can make certain life choices to manifest that in a productive way, less productive ways. You know, we've all gone through different life experiences where we've been our best self and our worst self. And so, yeah, I just think the chart is a map to where we could go in life. And I think that we have a hand to play in it. I don't think that everything is perfectly set in stone. So yeah, long story short is I couldn't agree more. And I think that is, yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, but if astrology is not grounded in science, why is it so popular? Why do people find astrology so useful in their life?
I think because life, as we all know and have experienced, is so hard to understand. And there's this feeling that we're on this wild roller coaster and we're never going to get off. And I think astrology is one of the tools, I don't think it's the only tool, but one of the tools for understanding and finding meaning in even the hardest points in life. So just, again, speaking from my own experience, I fell in love with astrology during a tough period of my life. And I think that's not an uncommon phenomenon. And I think it helps us, yeah, again, find meaning during periods of time where we feel like this bad cycle is never going to end. And I think with the timing of astrology, it could help, you know, hey, this certain cycle that you're in is a huge growth opportunity. It will end. You know, this is not going to be a forever thing for you. So I think people find a ton of relief in the whole relationship that they build with astrology. And also, final thought around this topic is reminding you that you're a spiritual being. So like reminding you that your life has meaning and that you're not just some inconsequential person walking around the world with no meaning. I think it just adds meaning to our lives.
Astrologer Nadine Jane stays with us. Join in on what you think of your zodiac sign, how you view predictions in light of the scientific community that dismisses astrology. 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We dig into astrology, the tendency to interpret the stars for advice on life and personality types. Astrology, this ancient form of divination that studies the qualities and movements of the planets, interprets how they influence the human experience. Call in about what you think about astrology, why you believe it or not. 800-642-1234. Astrologer Nadine Jane's book is called Magic Days, and she stays with us. Nadine, let's talk about numerology, the belief system in which numbers have predictive and spiritual meaning. Can you explain the relationship between numerology and astrology?
So they're pretty actually distinct spiritual practices. Numerology, tarot, and astrology are kind of the big three, I would say, that most people are engaging with. But numerology is really as exactly as it sounds. It's the study of numbers and if they have meaning. And this concept of why do we have a favorite jersey number? You know, we all fight over it when we were kids on a team. Or why does our anniversary date matter to us? Or why does our birthday numbers matter to us? So it's this concept of numbers carry significance in both potentially a predictive way, but most numerology practices are used for understanding a personality type or a life path, or figuring out what the day's energy is going to be. Those types of things are common numerology practices. But yeah, it's basically the interpretation and finding meaning within numbers, quite distinctly different than astrology.
And how much do these numbers matter, in essence, of what I would be asking? I mean, how much variation do you see from these different numbers?
So the biggest if I'm understanding your question correctly, the variation can be quite drastic. So an example being, trying to think if I can do one off the top of my head. Basically your personality reading can be quite different than your life journey's path, which is something that I discovered while writing the book. And so you can be maybe predisposed to, let's say, being a number four personality, which is someone who's quite disciplined and someone who kind of likes routine. But then your life path number, if you add them up a different way, can be, let's say, the number eight. And that's a lot about, increasing your self-awareness, doing practices like therapy. It's a very introspective lifetime. It's not so much about routine, but a much more enriching experience of figuring out how to diversify your life. And so, yeah, if I'm understanding your question correctly, there can be a big disparity depending on how you add up these numbers.
We're talking about astrology with Nadine Jane. She's an astrologist. New book is called Magic Days. You can join in at 800-642-1234. You mentioned you were going through a rough patch in your life and you turned at that point to astrology. Do you think people who seek out astrology are doing so because, you know, they are experiencing stress or distress in their life? I mean, why do people seek you out?
I mean, for a variety of reasons, I would say, but I hope this doesn't sound depressing, but it's not super common for people to seek out spiritual practices when they're at a high point in their life. I think that's kind of true across the board, no matter what spiritual practice you're talking about. And I think generally, if I were to deduce a commonality between why people seek out astrology, it's when you've maybe lost sight of your potential and you're at this point where you feel down on your luck, you feel maybe lost in what it is you want to achieve in this lifetime, you feel like you're lacking purpose or lacking an understanding of where you're going. And so I think astrology, like we were talking about earlier, it's this beautiful mirror into your magic, into the things that make you special. And so I think it just can be a practice that reminds you of who you are underneath the stress, underneath the burnout, underneath what life throws at us. Because as we all know, life can be incredibly exhausting. So yeah, for better, for worse, I do think it's a practice that people can gravitate towards when they're at a period of life where they're minimally lost, or maybe even in a period where they're not feeling too positive about where their life is going.
Do you have a favorite zodiac sign?
No,
Or don't you play favorites?
it's kind of impossible to once you study astrology so intensely. I used to, transparently, like when I first started getting into this, I was very subjectively attracted to Aquarius, which is just my own sign. I think that's really common for people to identify with their own. But genuinely, now that I've learned about astrology, something I love to spit as a fact is due to the nature of a birth chart, we actually all have 12 signs within us. And so there's no such thing as, it's so common for clients of mine to say, I hate Scorpios or I hate Geminis. And I always have to remind them that actually there's a part of your chart that's ruled by Gemini and there's a part of your chart that's ruled by Scorpio. And so, yeah, it's hard to hate any sign once you get to know them on such a deep level.
Let's turn to tarot cards now. You say that tarot cards date back to the mid-15th century. What information can you draw from tarot?
So tarot is pretty fascinating, in my opinion. So tarot was actually originally a card game, and I love to share that with people because I think that's lesser known. And it only developed spiritual meaning over time. And all of these cards, they ended up, people told stories about them, these archetypes of these images that were drawn in this original deck. And what they can do, if you would like to engage with tarot, is you can ask the deck a question, or you could really say anything to the deck and shuffle the deck, pull a card, and try and decipher to the best of your ability what that card means. Of course, Google is our friend. You can look up any card and see what that archetype is telling you. But tarot is really interesting because it begs the question of, is it predictive or not? And every tarot practitioner will tell you a different answer to that. So for some people, they think it's literally just a mirror into the psyche. You'll pull the card and you'll project your own interpretation onto the card, which of course can derive meaning. And then other people do believe that you're pulling guides and they're helping you understand your life, or they're supporting you that day. And then other people believe it is a predictive practice. So meaning you're pulling a card that's going to be the future of what's going to happen to you. And so I really like to encourage people to just engage with tarot in whatever way suits you. But I think there's something mischievous about it, the fact that it was originally just a card game. It actually wasn't it wasn't intended to be a spiritual practice, but it developed so much meaning over the ages.
Can you go further into how you engage with it? Like, explain a tarot card reading process or what that would be like.
So I'll just give the most common example of how people use tarot is you ask a question, let's say, what's going to be the future of my romantic relationship? That's such a common question. And you could pull three cards. And the first card is going to represent the past. The second card will represent the present of your relationship. And the third card will represent the future. And so, for example, you could pull for the past, you could pull the Six of Cups. And so that would say, there was a story here. There's a lot of history, nostalgia within this relationship. Perhaps you guys have been dating for a really long time. the present card could be, let's say, the Eight of Cups, which is about reflection. You know you need to change. You're not quite sure how you need to emotionally change within this relationship. And then let's say the third card is this archetype, which is the Chariot. And that's about movement and momentum, probably taking some initiative and changing your relationship. And so that's the most common example of a tarot reading is pulling three cards, past, present, future, and interpreting what those cards mean and what they have to say about those phases of your life.
What about the Death card? And what is misunderstood about this card?
So it's so easy just to assume it's about death. I mean, I think it's, I will speak for myself. I was terrified of the Death card when I first started practicing tarot. It's hard not to. When we hear that word, we all assume a loved one's going to die. We're going to die. Someone's going to fall ill. I mean, it's really, really scary. But the Death card is actually one of the most beautiful cards because it's a lot about the cyclical nature of life. It very rarely, if ever, has to do with tangible physical death, and so often has to do with the many deaths that we go through in this lifetime. You know, a death of what we thought our career was going to look like, or the death of what we thought our relationship was going to manifest as. And it's this invitation to say, if I'm willing to grieve what I used to think I was going to be, or what I used to think this relationship was going to be, then suddenly there's this opportunity to grow new life. So actually, I think the biggest misunderstanding with the Death card is it's really an invitation for rejuvenation and an invitation to, as cheesy as it sounds, kind of start over again. And so, yeah, I think I just love to remind people very rarely, if ever, does it have to do with anyone actually physically dying.
Astrologer Nadine Jain with us, our guide to how she views the stars and planets, speaking to different aspects of life. Join in on the zodiac signs, your belief and your doubt in astronomical phenomena, the traits you view of someone who's born under a specific sign. The number to call, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It's The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. How strongly do you identify with your zodiac sign? Do you read horoscopes? How do you view astrology in light of scientists who say it is no better than guesswork? It lacks scientific basis. Still time to talk. 800-642-1234. Astrologer Nadine Jain's new book is called Magic Days, and she stays with us. Nadine, how do you get the title of astrologer? How do you get the schooling or learning to be one, and then to be able to say someone is an astrologer?
So it's a tricky subject. That's making it a really interesting question. You don't really have to do anything to call yourself an astrologer. And I think that's true for a lot of spiritual practices. And I think that's a huge downside of it not being kind of universally received as a credible practice. And thus, there's no official schools, there's no official credentials. But I will say, I think with the popularity of astrology so high on the rise in our culture, I think that that will shift. And I really think there is a need for some type of universal test to maybe ensure that someone is a credible astrologer. But yeah, long story short, you technically don't have to do anything. However, there are best practices. And so there, schools do exist, first of all. So I went to a school called the Mercury Institute of Psychological Astrology. It's called MISPA. It's an online course. But there's tons of books out there. And I think really the most pragmatic way, even if you do go to school, to become an astrologer is to do a bunch of readings for free without calling yourself an astrologer professionally. So I think I did over 100 readings before I ever claimed the title of being an astrologer. And so, yeah, I think it's a practice you absolutely have to study. And then it's definitely something you have to put into practice. And I think once you really learn a lot about astrology, you don't even want to call yourself an astrologer because there's so much left to be learned and to be understood. But Yeah, I think it's a great question, and I would love for the astrology community to look into and think about that further, of what's a universal standard and practice to hold astrologers accountable to.
Let's go to Janet in Burlington on this. Janet, hi.
Hi, how are you all today?
Doing well. What is your question?
Great. So I'd like to know, how does one find a reputable person to chart your astrology or read your tarot cards?
Thank you, Janet. Nadine?
Thanks, Janet. It goes back to the question you just asked, which is, how do you find a credible astrologer and tarot reader? I think the best place to find one is through word of mouth. So a person that you know has gone to people that you know. And if there's no one in your network who's done a reading with someone, then I do think looking for an astrologer online who has reviews is really important. Looking at their credentials to see, have they gone to a school before, or are they self-taught? I think a tricky way that I would love for people to be wary of is, you know, TikTok, Instagram. There can be amazing astrologers and tarot card readers, but just because maybe you like something they say, look into their background, look at their website, make sure that you understand what their history, how long have they been doing this for? So an example being, like, I think it's important for someone to at least have a couple of years of professional readings to, you know, really offer you a good reading. But if you want to do it and you're not quite sure you want to, let's say, spend a lot of money on it, then you could go to someone knowing that they're in a learning process. So very long-winded way of saying just doing your research. And I think the best way is word of mouth, of seeing if someone had a good experience with someone.
We heard from Brianna in Wausau, who Brianna says is a Capricorn, and says friends are saying there's a Capricorn moon shift with the planets perhaps happening tomorrow. What are your suggestions for Capricorns around this time to manifest some good vibes?
So I could be wrong, but I think what she's referring to is that the sun is moving into Capricorn. I'm going to assume that's maybe what we're talking about. And I think that what I would say is, it's your season. And so leaning into all the qualities that make you you. So Capricorn season's really well known for setting goals, setting high intentions for oneself, but also doing the actionable things that you need to do to accomplish those goals. So, you know, all of the mundane tasks that we would typically put off for a different month, you know, December, end of December through early January is a really good time to set goals, but also to really begin executing them and setting yourself up for success. So I hope that answers your question. It's really a month to lean into your productivity.
I've heard you say it before that, you know, we're living in some chaotic times. What are the stars telling us about what is occurring in the world now? What do you see in terms of when you talk about this chaotic time?
So, I mean, the astrology is really intense. So what I would love to say to everyone is, you know, ever since 2020, I really feel like we've been in a period of reckoning. So the astrology is as dramatic as I think life feels. I also feel like the astrology of 2022 is a little bit of a holding pattern. We all know that we're in need of change, you know, globally, collectively, but also individually. And I think what 2023 implies is that it might be the first year really since 2023 that we can make some movement on a lot of the revelations that we gained over the past couple of years. 2020 was so hard, but I do feel like it gave birth to a lot of self-awareness that we didn't have individually and collectively. And thus 2023 is kind of an invitation to say, what idea or what notion or what change have you been sitting on since 2020 that you're ready to execute and that you're ready to maybe take a leap of faith on? And so, yes, it's a very uncomfortable, unpredictable, turbulent time. But at the same time, I think 2023 begs the question of what could you take into your hands and what could you execute now that you have a greater sense of awareness about how the world is operating? But yes, it's kind of crazy, unprecedented time.
Next week is when the planet Pluto will return to the exact same position it was in when the U.S. was born. Is the return of Pluto significant to our everyday lives?
So I think it's just significant to a nation. So I would say very significant to the United States, less so individuals. But, you know, Pluto is a generational planet. It takes approximately 225 years to come back to its original sign. And it's been 246 years since we signed the Declaration of Independence. And as you can imagine, no humans live long enough to experience their Pluto return, but countries do. And it's basically a reckoning for the United States of what were maybe some of the declarations that we made that were built on shaky grounds. You know, this idea of all men are created equal. Maybe not. Maybe just white upper class men were created equal at the signing of this Declaration of Independence. And so Pluto returns are about crumbling, shaking, grieving what we once thought was the reality. And thus, you know, we were just talking about the death card, Pluto represents death. It's this notion of, but then what can be reborn? If maybe we let go of the illusion of what our country was founded on to some degree, obviously there were great intentions there as well. How can we then begin a new idea of what the United States represents? How can we operate newly as a country? So I feel like it's this really interesting turning point for the United States to ask ourselves, where do we want to go for the next 246 years? And what do we need to grieve about how the past 246 years have gone? So it's a really big reckoning of truth when it comes to Pluto.
Nadine, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. It was such a pleasure.
Nadine Jain is an astrologer. The book is called Magic Days, Your Journey Through the Astrology, Numerology, and Tarot of Every Day of the Year. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.